Shalom and welcome everyone to the ICEJ weekly webinar. I'm David Parsons, Senior Vice President and Spokesman for the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem, coming to you from our TV studio in our global headquarters in the Israeli capital. We're so glad you joined us. There's lots happening in the region. It's hard to focus on one thing. The headlines bounce from Gaza to Syria to Iran, and then domestic stuff here in Israel. But we want to focus this week on U.S. President Donald Trump, who's involved in all of these areas, and his game plan for the Middle East. Does he have an overall game plan? To help us sort this out is our friend Josh Reinstein. He's the director of the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus and also president of the Israel Allies Foundation, which has sister caucuses, pro-Israel caucuses, in about parliaments in over 60 countries around the world. Good to see you, Josh.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Yeah. Now, you've... you did a book on Trump yourself. You've studied him. You're in a position with Israeli officials in the Knesset, in the government. Also, we just had a big conference in Washington that we attended. It was a great time, Josh. So you have your finger on the pulse of, what the Trump administration's trying to do here. I think in most instances, world leaders are flying by the seat of their pants, whatever plans they have. You're just reacting to events and such. But given Gaza, Syria, Iran, other things, do you think Trump has an overall game plan for stabilizing and utilizing this moment to move the Middle East in a much more peaceful direction?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Donald Trump has an overall game plan, and that not only that, he's implementing it to perfection. The events that you're seeing and the successes you're seeing in the Middle East are not by chance. There's something that's being there's an architect behind it, and it's an incredible strategy, and it's being implemented step by step. And I believe that the future of the Middle East is very bright.
Yeah, well, tell us what you think his game plan is here, especially in Gaza for Israel, the whole Palestinian issue, what's happening in Lebanon, Syria, disarming Hezbollah, the stability of Syria, and of course, Iran.
Well, I believe what he's trying to do is bring stability to the Middle East by taking out the bad actors and getting the moderate countries and some not so moderate countries to come to the table and expand economic deals and accords like the Abraham Accords. And the way he does this is he systematically goes after bad actors like Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, and he shows that America's back and that they're willing to stand behind their word. And what I find so surprising is how people can't seem to understand what Donald Trump's doing when it's all very predictable. You know, you have a leader for the first time that says what he does and does what he says. He says promises made, promises kept, and people still don't take him at his word and at face value. And I think that's a mistake. And the biggest victim of this policy would be Iran. I mean, they did not understand that he's really serious about taking out their leadership if they don't stop the murders and attacks and the hangings, and they haven't stopped. So I think the next big thing to happen in the Middle East that we're going to see is the complete wipeout of the Ayatollahs and the tyranny in Iran, which will once again transform the Middle East to a more peaceful place.
All right. That raises all kinds of questions because we did have this moment, 10 days ago, where there were millions of Iranians out in the street. Trump says, help's on the way. And then he held off attacking because he said the Ayatollahs communicated they weren't going to execute masses of people. Turns out they've killed as many as over 20,000, maybe injured over 300,000. What is Trump going to do about Iran? Anything you know? Because some expect attack as the aircraft carrier and other U.S. assets are closing in on the region?
Well, I think there definitely will be attack on Iran by the United States. He set off some very strict red lines, stopped massacring the protesters. They did not. As you mentioned, over 20,000 have been murdered, 330,000 injured, which is an astronomical number. They say 8,000 children have been blinded on purpose by the administration. And they started carrying out the hangings and, you know, death sentences on the protesters.
Burning people, gathering them and burning them alive in buildings.
Yeah, it's we're seeing scenes in Iran like we did on October 7th. It's the playbook of radical Islam. Donald Trump said not to do it. They did it. He's getting his pieces together. Look, the timeline is always the question, but the question isn't, is he going to act or not act? I think it's a foregone conclusion now. I wouldn't want to be the Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran today.
Mm-hmm. But the you know, Iran is saying, if you do this, we're going to unleash all hell. We're going to set the world on fire, I think they said. Trump is asking the Pentagon for some sort of decisive military options that deal such a blow. They're not going to be able to respond in any significant way. But is the window period already open? Are we closing in on a sort of window period when we might expect a U.S. attack?
Well, we saw in the 12-day war that Iran is a paper tiger. They're really good at threatening, not so good at carrying things out. They threatened the same thing against us, and they unleashed, you know, hundreds of ballistic missiles to try to do it, but they weren't successful. In the 12-day war, we hit thousands of targets, wiped out their nuclear capabilities, and 27 people in Israel were murdered, which is terrible, but it wasn't what we thought was going to happen. I mean, the estimates were 1,000 to 5,000 Israelis might be killed in that war, but they didn't have the capabilities. We were able to stop them pretty fast. America definitely has a game plan. Obviously, no one knows the exact date when they're going to initiate it, but it's obviously coming. Armored carrier, the aircraft carriers are coming to the region. They've done a couple trial runs now to see what the reaction is going to be. It's all coming down, and I believe it's going to be very decisive. I think it's going to be a death blow to the Iranian regime because Donald Trump doesn't do things half-assed. Mm-hmm. We saw that in Venezuela.
Yeah. Now, there were reports as these protests were peaking, but Trump backed off, that not only the Saudis, some of the other Arab countries were telling Donald Trump to hold back and don't destabilize the region, but even Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu here in Israel says Israel needs to a little more time to prepare for possible Iranian missile attacks again, and ask him to sort of wait. How do you answer those who say, we may have missed the moment, the right opportunity, when the people were in the streets and the regime was teetering already?
Yeah, no, I disagree with that assessment. You know, the news coming out, a lot of it's misinformation. A lot of it is actually put out on purpose to try to catch the enemy off foot. The attack isn't to, you know, go into the streets with jets and start, you know, shooting the police officers who are shooting the protesters. It's to wipe out the regime. And when right now the protesters are being locked in their homes, there's a curfew, they're not allowed to leave, they're being rounded up. But I believe that once the Ayatollahs fall, the military will then turn on the RJC, which is really the turning point. And when that happens, you have the military, you got the people. It's the latest poll came out that was released, it was leaked. That the president of Iran came out that 92% of Iranians are done with this administration. They don't want to live in tyranny. They want freedom. And so when the strikes come, if it's decisive, which I believe they will be, I think that will bring down the regime. And I think that's what Donald Trump was saying. He's not saying, you know, we're going to come and bring American troops to help fight on the streets against the oppressors. We're going to take out the head of the snake.
Mm-hmm. Now, Israel showed it had incredible intelligence back in the June war, the 12 days of war, and the first 12, 24 hours, they wiped out all those nuclear scientists, all those military leaders. Do you think the U.S. has that same level or better intelligence to really hit the head of the snake in those first hours?
Well, I don't know anything for certain, but I'm pretty sure they have our intelligence. We give them $51 billion a year worth of intelligence every year, and we share it with them. So they have not only our intelligence, but their intelligence. They have a lot of allies. Saudi Arabia would be very happy if we strike Iran, despite the news reports. They were very nervous about Iran. People are a lot braver now in the Middle East after the 12-day war. So I think the intelligence you can assume is spot on.
Okay. And we want to move to, let's first go to Syria, sort of cover it quickly before we go to Gaza. The Syrian regime under this new leader, used to be an ISIS warlord, he's gone in and fought against Kurdish forces that were U.S.-backed. The U.S., I think, still has troops in the northeast corner of Syria above the, on the east side of the Euphrates River, and yet the Damascus regime, these, you know, mix of ISIS and former ISIS guys, they plowed right in and forced another ceasefire, grabbed oil fields and all. And why is Trump backing this this, you know, former terrorist there in Damascus? He said it needs more than a choir boy to handle the tough situation there. It's good that you have someone strong.
Well, in Syria, you only have bad actors at the leadership level strong enough to do things. Obviously, there's the minorities who are victims, like the Kurds and the Christians, the Druze in the south as well. But what we're seeing is basically part of Trump's strategy of getting everyone to come together in the Middle East and form a new alliance that's led by America, that includes peace with Israel. And Trump plays it very straight. Either you do what he says and you're the best and the nicest and he loves you, or you don't and he crushes you. And so he's hoping that the terrorist leader of Syria, who's definitely no friend to America or Israel, plays ball. If he doesn't, then he won't last long. And if he does, then Donald Trump will continue to support him and pull down the sanctions. It's an all or nothing game when it comes to Donald Trump. And either you do what he wants and you get along, or you don't and you're gone. And again, we saw that in Venezuela. And we see that with a lot of different leaders around the world. He's a straight shooter. He always says promises made, promises kept. You can keep his word. He keeps his word, so people can trust what he says. But people seem not to understand that. So they play games. And when you play games, it's a very dangerous thing to do with President Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that he knows that Iran tried to assassinate him, or at least they had plans for it. So that
assassinate him again.
They've threatened, huh? So we got to move to Gaza, and this also involves some of these, you know, not so nice actors like Erdogan in Turkey and the Qatari emir, who, you know, as you were suggesting, Trump will say nice things to flatter these guys. He doesn't think they're wonderful, but he'll say, oh, they're good guys. We need them. They help get the hostages out. But I'm sure you're as troubled as I am that, you know, Erdogan is going to sit on this new board of peace. The Qataris are there. Their interest is in preserving Hamas in Gaza. We're moving into phase two in Gaza. Tell me what you see ahead, Trump's game plan concerning the whole rebuilding of Gaza, disarming Hamas. What are you seeing?
Well, first of all, I'm a big fan of the 20-point plan for Gaza. I'm not as disturbed as others that he's invited these leaders to sit on whatever board that is. It's a board position. The head of the board, the governor of Gaza, is President Donald Trump. He's going to make the decisions in the end. I don't think that there are going to be Turkish troops in Gaza or Qatari troops in Gaza, as some have suggested. Our prime minister is very firm on that. But if you look at the plan in general, which he got these leaders who are, you know, supportive of terror. Qatar supports Hamas, Turkey supports Hamas, they're radical Islamic leaders. He got them to sign this deal. And the deal is a sweetheart of a deal for America and especially for Israel. Immediately, the hostages, all the living hostages were released on day one before anything started. In order to move forward, Hamas has to be disarmed. No one thinks that Hamas is going to disarm on their own, but they don't have the hostage now to hide behind. So when it's determined that, okay, they're not going to disarm, Israel's going to go in and finish the job. And everyone signed on to say that's okay. That's part of the deal. And not only that, in the second phase of the plan, immediately all these countries that kept these Palestinian or Gazan refugees in Gaza throughout the war, which is a war crime there, you know, in any other war, you have to let the refugees leave. Only in Gaza, to keep them there as human shields, the international community wouldn't let them leave. The first part of the second phase of the plan is anyone who wants to leave can leave. And you're going to see a mass exodus of people from Gaza leaving Gaza. You're going to see a complete destruction of Hamas. And you're going to see a rebuilding under the auspices of President Donald Trump into a economic powerhouse in the Gaza Strip. So I think that the deal itself is amazing. The devil's in the details, but I think we have a real partner that we can trust in President Donald Trump, and he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, that's interesting because it doesn't get that much play in the media. When it comes to Gazans wanting to leave, it's all about which country will they go to and who will accept them, and no one seems to be willing except this Somalia land, which is trying to gain quick independence in order to do this in some sort of special secret deal with Israel. Where are they going to go if they're allowed to go as the first part of phase two? Where would you expect them to go?
I think that's already been planned out. I think everyone knows where they're going to go.
No one set it out publicly yet.
No one said it publicly because the countries are going to take a lot of heat from Islamic countries. And so we're just waiting for them to be allowed to leave. But I think you hinted at Somaliland. I think they're going to take a big amount. I think you're going to see them go to other countries, too. I mean, France already said that they're willing to take some and really? Canada. And they'll go to places like Indonesia. And once they're allowed to leave and they're able to get out of there, I think that there will be places that take them in. I think these discussions happened over the last 6 months and that it's all being, you know, I think it's a very well-directed or orchestrated plan. And what's amazing about it is they actually got countries who are supportive of the terror organization Hamas, like Turkey and Qatar, to sign it. I think that's what's amazing about it. Not that they have a position on the board of whatever board of peace is. I don't even know what that means. But the fact that they actually have committed to the destruction of Hamas and allowing the refugees leave is a major, major victory for Israel, and especially our prime minister, who promised the people of Israel total victory, which meant the complete destruction of Hamas, the stopping of all the arms and attacks coming from there, and also the return of our hostages, which he's already completed.
Yeah, I do agree.
Except for one of the bodies that are still being held there, just to, you know, twist the knife.
I do agree there are some very good advantages in this plan for Israel. They have international and even Arab approval to stay in half of Gaza at this new yellow line until that's with international approval, Israeli occupation of Gaza, at least half of it. Until Hamas disarms, and this was approved by the UN, basically making Trump the governor of Gaza. But I still expect some real hitches ahead in trying to roll out this game plan for Gaza.
It's not just that, David, that we have 53%. There are places of Gaza that we never have to leave that will become part of the buffer zone permanently. But more than that, they've all committed that if Hamas doesn't disarm, we can go in there and finish the job too. That's part of the plan also.
They'll push back on it then, but this is part of what they agreed to.
Maybe they'll say I didn't read the fine print.
Yeah. Well, the fine print in the board of concerning this board of peace is a special document that's been drafted up since. It says I read somewhere it says that Trump is the chairperson for life, and that it's not only going to try and solve the problem of Gaza, which has been with us for so long, but it's going to try and work for peace in other regions. And all of a sudden, the UN is saying, this is our job. Is he using this to bypass the United Nations, which is fairly worthless in many ways for most of us, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the UN is a terror-operated organization. What most people don't realize is that the vast majority of countries are run by dictators and tyrants. So when you have one vote for each country, then you're always going to get it skewed in the way of bad. UN has been supporting Hamas. A lot of the Hamas members were controlling UNRWA, the UN refugee organization that's since been defunded by Trump. Look, again, this is a great plan by all measures, because Donald Trump is someone that Israel trusts explicitly. I don't think there's a world leader, including our own, that's as popular as President Donald Trump in Israel, because he delivers. He's delivered some of the most astonishing successes for Israel. He's the most pro-Israel president in the history of the world, not just of America. So we're seeing these incredible successes, and he's just continuing it. And his redrawing of the map of the Middle East, where you have moderate Arab countries and even not so moderate coming together and recognizing Israel, making economic accords, falls in line with his greater plan, which is to bring the wealth of the Middle East into Israel and then from Israel to Gaza, which he controls, back to America. And the reason this is all part of a wider plan of his pressure on what he sees as the only real enemy in the world, and that's China. By bringing these countries on board into the Abraham Accords with America and Israel, it cuts the ties between Iran and China and these countries as well, so that he can suck the money towards America from this region and then re-up his pressure on China from the moderate Asian countries around it while sucking out their manufacturing into India and places like that. So this is all very well planned out. I've been in shock to see it, how in just 1 year, and yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of his inauguration, how he's so far developed this plan. This is a plan that was talked about a year ago, and it seemed like just a pie in the sky plan. And he's been able to, with incredible precision, step by step, move this this ball down to the goalpost. So it's really impressive.
So the Abraham Accords, which he initiated in his first term, he's revived it now, but with a broader vision of not only gaining Israeli acceptance throughout the region, but in Arab, Saudi, UAE, others, investment in Israel high tech, redeveloping Gaza, and all the a more American hegemony over the flow of oil, which China needs, but turning the region. You've got Syria that's sort of been flipped towards a more Western orientation. I'd say they're more in the Turkish orbit now than, say, Russia, but also looking west for help, support, investment. And then if you take out the leaders in Iran, and put in a friendlier. My thinking is, if you take them out, you're going to have a lot of chaos in that country, like you have in Syria and Libya and whatever. It might take a while, but this is all a grand design to sort of keep China from outpacing the U.S. in dominating the world.
Absolutely. And I think that you've actually outlined it very well. That's exactly what's happening. You know, you got Russia out of Syria. He's moving them more towards him with the carrot. He's got the moderate Arab countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar all coming to the White House kissing the ring. And then he's got the biggest problem in the Middle East almost solved, which is Iran with the 12-day war and knocking out their nukes. A lot of the moderate countries are a lot braver. They're all scared of Iran. They thought, you know, not to mess with them. They don't feel that way anymore, and they're about to be toppled, which was the Russia-China-Iran axis. He's about to topple that. And then he's bringing them through these very strong Abraham Accords, which are really economic accords. One of the things people don't realize is, you know, they always say, oh, you know, we'll sign an accord with Saudi Arabia, but if we you know, if there's no Palestinian state, they'll pull out of the accord. Once you're in the accord, it's very hard to pull out. We're talking about trillions of dollars of investment and deals between America, Israel, moderate countries, it would just crush your economy. So they're one-way deals that strengthen everyone involved, but it's very hard to leave them once it's in place. And so he's masterfully maneuvering all these pieces at the same time, and it's all coming into fruition. I think that by March, we'll go in and wipe out Hamas. I think that phase two will be a brilliant success, and about half the Gazans will leave. The rest will help to rebuild under the control of Donald Trump as the head of this policy, whatever it's called, the Peace Council, but it'll be really run by him. I think that he's also charging everyone $1 billion to join, so he'll actually fund the building of it through this Peace Council, even though it's his initiative. And I think he's way ahead of schedule on his plans to try to take China out of the Middle East and bring the Middle East back to the West and build these economic cooperation plans. It's really phenomenal. I don't think anyone could have done this. And it's not just him. It's the team around him that helped to build these plans and strategies. It's really going well.
Yeah. I think if you pay $1 billion, it buys you a permanent seat on the Board of Peace. But otherwise, it's like a three-year term. He invited Putin on. That's kind of still scratching my head about that, a Board of Peace, when most of the world looks at him as a murderer right now and war crimes.
It was actually very interesting because they estimated that the rebuilding of Gaza would cost $60 billion, and he invited 60 countries to join and asked them to give $1 billion. So I think it's also a way to completely offset any of the costs from America of rebuilding Gaza, even though it's going to be controlled by America. I mean, I believe that in the next year, we're going to see incredible peace and prosperity in the Middle East because of these plans. And it's really amazing how he's able to pull them off.
I think the biggest current concern for me and many pro-Israel Christians is concerning Trump is the way he says nice things about Erdogan and the Qataris that, you know, really make us uncomfortable, but we know he does that to flatter him and get him close, but he can hold him. Do you think Turkey and Qatar, you say the IDF, if Hamas doesn't disarm, the IDF's going to go take care of it. Aren't the interests of Turkey and Qatar in staying involved in Gaza through the Board of Peace and whatever? They're not going to get Turkish troops in there if Israel can help it, but aren't they going to do they have enough leverage to help Hamas survive in Gaza, which you have to admit they're Muslim Brotherhood, and that would be their aim in being involved?
I think they have zero leverage. I think all the leverage is with Donald Trump. This is a guy who you can't buy. He's a billionaire. Okay, so that whole thing that Qatar is buying Trump, you know, they're going to give him a $400 million plane. He's worth $6 billion. So now that he's worth $6.4 billion, now you can buy him. It makes no sense. And either it's his way or the highway. So if you don't play ball with Donald Trump, you don't do what he wants, then they won't be so nice and flattered in public and talked about so well. So I think that all the cards are being held by President Donald Trump, and he's playing them beautifully. And everyone knows now that there's a new sheriff in town, that America's back. America's the strongest power in the world. And if you don't play ball, you're going to get crushed. So I think everyone's being nice, and he's being nice, but it's all according to his plan, not according to theirs. So I don't see any threat of Hamas coming out of this alive. In fact, that's the whole part of the plan. The whole 20-point plan is based on the destruction of Hamas. Their only chance is to leave and go to Turkey and Qatar. That might be something. I don't think they'll do it and disarm voluntarily. But I don't believe they're going to do any of that. And I don't believe also any Arab countries are going to come in and start disarming them. That's not going to happen. So I believe we're going to do it. And I believe it's going to be very fast, because they don't have the hostages. We have 53% of the whole area of the land around it. It's surrounded. So you have 53% of Israel. In the middle, you have Hamas. And so to go like this and this and this is a very short period. You know, they're talking about 3 weeks until we can wipe them out completely. And there's nothing really holding us back. And we have the backing of the international community that we can do it according to the plan. Mm-hmm. So I think that all the cards are being held by Donald Trump. And that I trust his instincts, I trust his plan, I trust his strategy, and I think it's going to work out very well.
This has been a fascinating discussion. I know if even half of this happens, it's going to be a much more stable region and much better for Israel. But the thought of Hamas disarmed and no longer in control of Gaza, and the thought of even just within a few days, we're recording this a day before broadcasting, Trump's on his way to Davos, flying there, and even by the time we air at 3 o'clock on Thursday, something may have happened in Iran. That is really where we could be on the brink of a big historic event there in trying to topple that regime. We'll see how it plays out. But Josh Reinstein, the director of the Knesset Christian Allies Caucus, president of the Israel Allies Foundation, rubbing shoulders every day, has the ear of all the Israeli officials and people in Washington, giving us Trump's overall game plan for the Middle East. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you. And I just want to mention, it also happens to be God's plan. We see in the Bible that we win at the end of the story. We didn't know how, and now people are starting to see it.
Amen. Okay. All right. Thank you, Josh, and thank you, everyone, for joining us. We hope you've been informed, and we want you to join us next week, Thursday, 3 p.m. Israel time, here for the ICEJ weekly webinars. Till then, wishing you shalom from Jerusalem.